Hello and welcome to the Echo Chamber podcast. My name is Tony Groves and today we are back talking homelessness, trauma and the impact of what we are actually doing to, it's not just the number of people who are actually currently homeless, it's the number of people who transition, using this awful phrase, true homelessness. It's into, I think some of the research I've shown, has shown that it's in excess of 34,000, 35,000 people have moved through emergency accommodation over the last decade. It's probably more. But if you put that in context, you're talking about a very large Irish town. You know, we're not talking about something small. In other words, it's a lot more than just the headline figure. I am joined as always by my co-host Martin. How are you keeping?
Not too bad, and I'm glad we're back to covering this subject, Tony. We've done an awful lot on the housing situation, on homelessness, and I don't like it to get cool. I think we should stay on top of it a lot, and we do, and in fairness we do.
Yeah, I understand, but it's also something that under the guise, let's put this in context for listeners. Just, I know the headline number I said isn't important. It's the number of people who have experienced it. But there's also the fact that the eviction ban has been lifted. It's gone from Friday. And we've seen, you know, in recent days, people in an apartment block in South County Dublin who have been served with eviction notice, some of whom have lived there for nearly 20 years. And we've seen in the middle of a global pandemic, while initially homelessness decreased, which you would anticipate would be the norm, it has started to grow again. Enough of that. We are delighted to be joined by William Cummings of BABS, the Empowerment Project. And William, you've done what only can be described as a terrific report and insight into the experiences of people in homelessness. Do you want to give the listeners just a quick overview and we maybe talk about that then in a little bit more detail?
Yeah, so I can't take all the credit myself. I had an amazing team beside me, and I think when we started off and I said to them that we were going to do a project on homelessness, I don't think anybody expects this report to be as polished and as comprehensive as it came out. But I have to say the project lead, Emer O'Grady, did a great job in putting the project together. But the idea was to we obviously run the free listening service here in City Help and Homeless. We are always kind of speaking to people about breaking down the barriers that people experience homelessness facing. So we decided 8 months ago on a rainy day to actually empower people to have a voice. And that was our main objective, was to actually get the voice from the street and actively listen to what is going, what they're going through, and what is actually involved in being homeless in the city. We started off drafting up a list of questions. We really wanted to find out what was happening and what was going on for people experiencing homelessness. We started asking the questions, and then we actually brought in five of our clients who are actually experiencing homelessness, and we asked them, and they actually offered us different answers, more of a dynamic. So we asked five of our clients to come in, and we went through the survey with them, because this was really about empowerment. And the clients told us that while it was comprehensive, it wasn't comprehensive enough, and they started to add on to it, and they really guided us on what questions we were going to ask and how we were going, what approach we were going to take on this.
Going to interrupt the podcast now because we have to, actually. That's why there's it's unbelievable amounts of people listening to these podcasts. There's an unbelievable amount of podcasts being produced. And we are, I think this week we're going to hit about 520 just on the Echo Chamber alone. You know, we're seeing a third annual housing conference in Maynooth that we're going to be covering, things that weren't possible a few years ago. However, you don't understand how tenuous it is. It's genuinely hand to mouth around here, and we need support. It's really that simple, Martin.
It is, Tony. And like, we're doing a lot of work outside of podcasting as well, which, you know, it all feeds off the door to check. I mean, I've done the podcast with Mick Clifford on bogus self-employment. You know, these are all kind of civic stuff that we're doing outside of the Tortoise Shack. And I know you're doing it as well.
Yeah, but like, I just, what frustrates me is this trying to, people keep, I get this awful thing where we're understanding why we do what we do, what we want to do, continue to do what we do. But it's very hard to square the circle of making it viable. I mean, there's no way we can have ads or sponsors. Actually, we're very ad and sponsor unfriendly, to tell you the truth. And that's telling listeners that they're just not. Who's interested in people who are pulling against the establishment as vociferously as we are? But the issue remains that if this doesn't start to actually...
Turn a book, Tony. Yeah,
it's not even turn a book. We have an opportunity here, I think, with people that we get to speak with and people to actually make impacts, and we've made impacts. You're in the PAC. We've seen there's things coming out of the last season of Policed that the Garda Commissioner himself is involved in. You know,
that's right.
There's actual fundamental changes happening in Irish society that we help to do, but it won't continue to go unless somebody puts their hands in their pocket and goes to patreon.com/tortoiseshack and helps us do it.
And I like the work we're doing, or like the work I'm doing with whistleblowers now, Tony, as well. Like, we've had Noel on, and we're going to have other whistleblowers on. These are people who have put themselves on the line to try and make things better in Ireland, and the only outlet they get is us.
I mean, I don't know what more I can add to it other than I really do hope, if you enjoy what you hear or if you get something out of it, that you'll give something back. Because realistically, there's a lot of competing aspects for people's money out there. I get that. But we're asking for the price of a coffee once a month. You know, a fancy coffee would be nice. You know, but we'll settle for a cheap coffee if that's what you want. And you get loads back in return. That's the truth as well.
That's the difference. There's an awful lot that comes back, a huge amount. I mean, as much as any radio station is turning out, Tony, on shows. And just to remind people where they have to go to become a patron of the Tortoise Shack, it's patreon.com/tortoiseshack, and it's not expensive. It's really not. So if you want to see a difference, you're going to have to pay for it. It's that simple.
They also advised us about the fear of engagement, and there would be a fear of speaking to us, that they might lose their bed or somebody might find out that they were speaking to us. So we anonymized the whole project. We anonymized everything. We just, you know, your gender and your age, and everything else was anonymized. So we started from there, and we started collecting the information.
And it's incredible that people who are homeless would feel that they could be under threat of losing what is a mat on a floor. I mean, that's really what it is, that they could be losing a mat on the floor for speaking up about the conditions that they're living in. It's incredible.
Yeah, well, that was one of the reasons why we felt so passionate about doing it. That there is quite a big disconnect, and it really is illustrated all over this report. There's a fear of engagement. There's a fear of engagement with services, fear of making a complaint, fear of asking anything about your rights, and a lot of the time, people feel they have to get into a situation where they are screaming or shouting, or they have to gear themselves up to make a complaint. And it usually goes on one way, but then it then passes as being antisocial.
Yeah.
There's antisocial behavior at it, and then they end up having to leave the organization.
Some of the findings are, I hate to say it, not surprising and yet stark, if that is fair. There, you know, it's like, we've spoken to Sharon Lambert a lot about trauma-informed design of how, you know, services were saying, well, we can't talk to that person because, as you put it, maybe they're deemed to be loud and aggressive. Whereas the reality of the situation is that they've, you know, they're suffering from certain aspects, whether it be mental health, which you also cover in the report, the trauma of homelessness itself. There may be additional needs in terms of use of substances to try and help them get through the day, or whatever bridge that they're using, and these things like that. But some of the statistics are staggering. You know, 76% of homeless people said they don't have a homeless service key worker. 24% who do have a key worker. The majority of them said that support was fair, but 30% said it was poor, and 15% said it was good, and no one said it was excellent. I mean, this is not a knock on key workers. This is a knock on what's become an industry in terms of, you know, we talk about it all the time. The privatization of homelessness is quite a scary thing that's gone on in plain view. We can see it. Like, I think the report again says something like, I'm right about 200 million of a budget on homeless on homeless services. This sort of stuff. We call it often the profit for human misery kind of market in many ways, and this highlights it greatly. Do you want to give us a sense of some of those key findings that that, again, I hate to say it, are stark and yet not surprising?
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that stood out to me was it was the one question that everybody answered, and it was, "Do you have an exit plan from homelessness?" And 98% of answered no. And most of the time they were saying, "We don't know what you're talking about." Now, apparently there is an exit plan for everybody, and it actually it exists somewhere on the system. We haven't been able to get a copy of that, and we have asked. And we have offered our own copy because of the two people that did answer yes to that question is actually two clients of mine, and they have, and when people come in to us, we actually put together an exit plan. So we break down the barriers, and we don't do this all ourselves. We look at what the client needs. We look at what is involved, what's needed in their plan, and we write all that down, and then we write out to other services, and we create this centralized advocacy system where all the information comes back to us. We explain it to the client, and we try and support the client on the information and even encourage them to engage with the other services. And sometimes they might feel that they're frightened to do it, but we encourage them, and we are the voice for them, and it works. It clients forward. One of the and I found that was quite hard, you know, that was a stark one, because if you don't have an exit plan and you're in homelessness, you're basically existing because you're going nowhere. You can't plan anything. You're basically just existing. You're not living a life.
No, it's day to day, really. It's bed to bed or night to night. Have you looked at models that are better models elsewhere to kind of inform your report?
Yeah, we got great advice. Obviously, when we collected all the information, we didn't want it to be just another report. We wanted to have solution-based documents. But we've actually produced two solution-based documents, and we've another three coming next year. And we looked at we looked at Finland, we looked at Norway, we looked at Sweden, we looked at Denmark, we even looked at services that are happening in Poland. And we have one of the people that were on the team, Pat, has volunteered at Crisis at Christmas in London. So we took a lot of information from that. One of the main objectives that we wanted from this report was to challenge the commercial sensitivity that Dublin's Council and Dublin Regional Homeless Executive have been hiding behind. And we have sent in FOIs, and we haven't got an answer to those yet. But we actually have human rights students in Galway doing that for us, and they're continuing to do that because we have,
and we hope to go talk to those as well in addition to this conversation and broaden that out. And that's absolutely something that we will do, because they are You know, just the idea that you talk about commercial sensitivities around what is basically essentially the outsourcing of a human right. Let's call it a spade here. I mean, we've had the UN Special Rapporteur on this podcast, and she talks about housing as a human right. One of the really scary things in this report, I'm sorry to come in, but it's just the idea that almost everybody had children. Over a third of people have children, but nearly most of them, obviously the children don't reside with them. And I'm always struck by the idea that trauma is generational. Mm-hmm. And this seems to be something that we're compounding when we do something as blatant as this, where we're putting in a position whereby sometimes through, whether it's an emergency accommodation that's not suitable for, say, a mother and a child, where the child is then separated from the parent, which is another further traumatic event, or the parent is deemed at that stage not fit to be able to care for the child. Are we getting this message through? Because I don't see it enough, because there is, and I hate to say this, but there's this awful, keep hearing reports of someone died in emergency services, but we're seeing a spate of young women whose lives have been lost or taken, or they've died via their own hand. But I don't think that's fair. They've died because of the situation that they're in, and there's a separation thing in this. That kind of is borne out in some of the findings of this report.
It is the one I've been shouting from the rooftops since I started here, that the plight of the unaccompanied mother. And it's such a horrible name to put on somebody, an unaccompanied mother, in this city is horrendous. And I've spoken to Hannah Lucy, who's doing a PhD on mothers and homes. I've spoken to Maeve O'Rourke, a student, and I've spoken to my own mother, who actually worked in the Sherrow Street Women's Centre, about trauma and about, you know, when your child is removed from you. We actually produced a document and we are going to launch it. We are looking to create a pilot scheme for unaccompanied mothers in homelessness. And that is to have a place where they can be placed, and they can wrap around service of everything like centralized advocacy, where we will advocate with two, we will advocate with the courts, we will advocate with all the services that they need. We will also look to implement and carry out reunification plans. Because at the moment, if a young mother turns up to Dublin City Council and her children are in care, and they can go into care for whatever reason, it could be domestic violence, it could be a partner breaking an access order, in them that the child has. It's the trauma. If they turn up, they're seen as a single woman and put into a single woman accommodation. So that in itself has huge traumatic effects on yourself. Not only are you going through the trauma of becoming homeless, of your child being taken into care, but you're also then being stripped of your motherhood. You're being stripped as a parent. I'm a parent myself, and I can tell you, I would. My dying day, if anybody tried to remove the fact that I'm a parent from me. The fact that we've set up a system that allows that to happen, I actually feel, and I'm not overplaying this, I actually feel that it's going to be part of the system that allows this.
I think that system has existed before any of us were born. I think it's a continuation of the system which has always been there, which has always targeted young mothers and children. You know, unaccompanied mothers, that's such an awful phrase when we think that it's very little from unmarried mothers. You know, it's the same kind of sensibilities that the state is applying to women with children. It's absolutely disgraceful. It's utterly disgraceful that it's still going on to this day.
Yeah, it is. And we're hoping to really take this, as I said, like Babs and ICHH, when we started out to do this report with this amazing team that we had, we really weren't going to just do the report. We wanted to have solution-based documents. And that is one of the main documents that came out of it was the Mothers and Homelessness document. And you know, when we collected all the information and we started speaking to students in Galway, they found it very, very difficult at first to actually understand what we were saying. You know, is this right? They're human rights students. And they were like, you know, is this really happening? Are we really living in a country that allows this to happen? And we're supposed to be one of the richest in Europe, one of the richest countries in Europe. And, you know, we are allowing our young mothers to go through this. And the other side of that is we're also looking at now at the moment, we're looking at second generation homeless. So ICHH Labs were dealing with a case recently where the mother was homeless on the streets and the daughter was out of care and ended up in homelessness as well. And we were dealing with both.
And it goes back to what I was saying earlier about that being intergenerational and the trauma being passed on. And we've seen it. We've seen it in so many instances. I mean, we go back to nearly 4 years ago, Martin, when we spoke to Mary McAuliffe, the historian and feminist historian who sat here and told us that we institutionalize,
we warehouse our poor, Tony.
She warehouses our poor, but she was also very specific in terms of the crime of women having sex was also considered a crime. And it's still to this day we've penalized it. And we've seen following the global financial crisis that the people who are most impacted were single parents who are, you know, predominantly a woman and child. And this is what we're dealing with. Look, it is something we'll come back to, but I do want to also go into the scale of the report again and address the issues around addiction services. And I go back to what I said earlier about we still are putting the chicken before the egg or the cart before the horse when it comes to some of these things where it's, you know, someone wants to present for care. And it's clear looking at it that people have presented for you know, to try and get some supports, but the supports they found are wholly inadequate, and the support providers would say, well, you know, they weren't in a position to receive support at that stage. We're getting this wrong from the outset. It's set up to fail. Is that fair enough, William?
It is, and I've spoken to some very, very good people in addiction services, and they have been kind of saying this for a long, long time. They're also very concerned about when people go through. You know, first of all, there's the assessment and how do we catch them, and how do we stabilize them. But then also, when you go through your detox and you're substance free, or you're there out and there's nowhere for you to go. You're going back into the situation that actually may have led you towards that. And I think, you know, I mean, we're looking for an investigation into everything, I suppose. But that is something that really, really needs to be looked at, because it's set up for failure. But it's also there's a cost issue here that we have to look at. Are we getting value for money out of that system? And I don't think we are, because every time something comes out and has been set up for failure, they have to go back through the system. And I think one of the quotes he got to me in it was, people are being minced. And I think people are.
When you set up a homelessness industry so that it depends on people being homeless, is there not an element of that is the actual setting it up to fail? So as long as there's profits in it, people are going to keep getting recycled through it. That is the aim of any profit-making organization, is to keep making profits. So is the underlying idea that you have homelessness, you run homelessness services for profit, is that the real failure?
I think it is. This was pointed out to us at the beginning, actually. We were looking for change on a social and industrial level, is what we were told. And it was actually highlighted in your TV documentary as well, that the actual expert in Finland said something that I have been saying, Anthony Flynn, for years, and in fairness, Anthony has been saying this too, is that the only way we are going to eradicate homelessness in Ireland, is to actually look where the money is going, understand where the money is going, and to actually have a full investigation into where we get value from it. I don't think we are. I think it's for profit. I think homelessness is for profit. And therefore, it means that homelessness is real and it's tender. And we're talking about human beings here. So we now get into the realms of people.
We're losing you. Sorry, William. I don't know if it's the mic now or if it's the thing, but we've lost you a few times there. I'm just going to come in and then we'll go from that. On the value for money question, I actually think the idea that we asked that question, because I saw recently comments from the DRHEA talking about value for money and the efficiency, particularly around the what is for-profit emergency services providers. You know, Eileen Gleeson's comments around some of the buildings that they've taken on, that, you know, the Dublin Inquiry have done terrific work on to show that they're not really apparent. They don't provide the wraparound services that these people A, require and B, deserve. You know, there's a lot that's lacking in this, whether it's just the simple matter of fire safety certificates, and some of them we've seen, you know, and you're getting to the very basics where we are one accident away from a tragedy. But I would put it to many people listening that we've had the tragedies. I mean, you guys have to pick up the phone and answer to find, you know, to hear about someone else who's passed over the course of a night, who was discovered in their room, and that their tragedy is enough. I don't know what it's going to take to get the message across that that it's happening right now, and it doesn't have to be that way. So I suppose if we could move then to, it is a solutions based document, and I'm sure, and maybe this is unfair of me, it does seem to me that there's going to be more work coming on the back of this. Is that fair to say?
Yes, there is. There is definitely more work coming on the back of this, and we're definitely asking, we're asking all the TDs that we spoke to today, everybody that was out taking photographs with us, the conversation we're having is, will you back our solutions? Will you speak about our solutions? And when you have an open conversation with us about those solutions, and we have been told by everybody that's in the photographs that they are going to listen to us and they will speak to us. They want to have a conversation on it. But as I said, it's we spoke to Owen O'Brien, we spoke to Gary Gannon. We haven't actually spoken to the housing minister yet, but I hope that he does take my invitation. Actually have a constructive conversation.
Tony will have a word with him there and make sure, absolutely do his best to make sure.
I'll text him in about 5 minutes when this is over. But
And I was just going to say, William, thanks very much for coming on and talking to us about this today. Sorry the line is so bad, and we may have to come back this. I think we're definitely going to have to come back to this in the future. Do you hope to see some action soon from those in power?
We do. We have a document launching in, and it's actually finished. We're just getting signed off. That was the document that the student in Galway put together, and it's a homeless bill of rights. It's a rights document, but also has a piece in this about the responsibility of engagement, and we are asking Dublin Regional Homes Executive to meet us, conversation with us, and implement this, fund it as a workshop, experiencing homelessness and to those who operate the private.
I think that's the way you start. I think this is like we talk about the difference between Martin, we've spoken about the difference between universal basic income and universal basic services. This is a bill of rights is what underpins, you know, the fundamental needs and minimum standards that people should be able to avail of, and net that they don't fall below. You keep mentioning Galway, and it's no coincidence that out in NUI, Galway is good as Maeve O'Rourke and Martin, you'd remember this, that Maeve told us when she was off in the US studying, and she was talking about human rights, and she was talking, and she met her lecturer at the time, and she said, "What are you passionate about?" And Maeve described, you know, some of the injustices that were happening at home, and she said, "Well, what are you doing here?" So, and Maeve basically finished out and went home to fight for justice for people in Ireland, and you know, we're eternally grateful for people like her and the work that they're doing. And William, we appreciate the report. More people need to see it. We'll share it. The link will be on this podcast, so all you got to do is put your finger on the link and you'll be able to read through it. There's a lot in it. Also, some of it is quite, I'm supposed to say, triggering, I suppose. We didn't even get to the fact that 40% of people have experienced some form of sexual abuse and that wasn't it intentionally, folks. We will come back to this. We're not finished with covering this.
We are certainly not finished with covering this. And that ties into, Tony, what we've heard about why people end up in homelessness in the first place. Yeah. A lot of it is due to trauma. An awful lot of it is due to trauma.
William, thank you for taking the time to talk to us today. Thank you for the work you guys have done, and tell the guys that it is appreciated, and we will be talking to you guys over the coming weeks, and we look forward to seeing the Bill of Rights, because I think it's a great place to start off.
Yeah, it is. I thank you for having me on, and I really just want to take the opportunity to thank the team of volunteers that put this together. It was a team of volunteers, and it's hard to get people 8 months of their life to do a document. It did, and I think it's an amazing document. And there is a lot of information in it, but we firmly believed that a comprehensive look and a voice from the street about these issues was definitely required and needed. But now we need people to actually engage with us. We have the information. We have empowered the people on the experiencing homelessness, use their voice, and now we can't let them down by not moving forward.
Thanks again, William. It's been great to chat with you, and I hope to chat with you again in the future.
Talk to you soon, folks. Take care. Bye bye.
Tony and Martin, Martin and Tony, speaking to interesting people only. It's the Echo Chamber podcast. Subscribe now on Patreon.